Here on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, and let's see if we can add a few things to some of the discussions we had yesterday. First of all, we had the Bracha L'Achreha Haroves Rivenu. Let's mention here the Beis Yosef in Simon Tafresh Tzadi Beis, who divides up this bracha into five different parts, and he explains each of the five parts. The first part is Haroves Rivenu, and this refers to situations of nations who want to do evil to Yisrael for no reason whatsoever. Haroves Rivenu, Shelo Yareinu Lanu, they shouldn't do evil to us. The second part of Haroves Rivenu addresses those who come with a taina against us, not bechinam. They have a din against us, a claim. It's almost as if there's a court case, and that's hadonas dinenu. They shouldn't do evil against us through their din. Then sometimes we're talking about those nations that have already risen up against us in the past, and that's because of our sins. And here the bracha reflects Hanokimus Nikmasenu, that even though we suffered punishment for our sins, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Nokimus Nikmenu because they had no right Lahara Lanu. Now there are two types of goyim. There are goyim who are oivim belev ubenefesh. In other words, they spend their whole time trying to scheme against us, to look for opportunities to bring evil against Israel. And that reflects itself in Hamashalim Gulu. Oh, l'chalei v'nafshenu. Shavua tov, I'll be with you in a minute, Cherry. Hamashalim Gmul l'chalei v'nafshenu. Gmul means pay them back midah k'neged midah. They should recognize that Yad Hashem osos azos, and therefore when they brought evil against Israel, Yesha ein mariam lanu misin osam osanu elim nesha darkam lahara tamid. In some cases, the evildoers are just evil. They're out for evil. That's their essence. It has nothing to do with the hatred for the Jew per se. And here it says, Vanifra lanu misarenu. And the Beis Yosef concludes, Ki li elu eno choshesh l'shalom lehem mida k'negemi ki lo das lahem v'lo tfuna. There's no justification for their actions. They're just, shall we say, rotten to the core. But it's beautiful how the Beis Yosef takes apart this bracha piece by piece, analyzing each section, each lashon in the bracha of Haroves Rivenu. The Gemara says that we don't call up for reading of the Torah less than 10 psukim. And of course we're going to have long discussions about how to divide up 10 psukim amongst 3 korim. We started that yesterday, but Tosus has a kasha from Parshas Amalek. In Amalek there are only 9 psukim in the parasha, and yet we read it on Purim. And Tosus answers that Nigmar Ha'inyan Shel Hayom Achar Tisha Psukim. That 9 Psukim is enough to form a conceptual unit and cover the motif of Milchemes Amalek. There's no need to add another, in this case, the 10th Pasuk. Sfasemes offers another answer, that it's possible that since we read the Megillah as well, not just Kriyas HaTorah, so therefore we're reading other psukim in Tanakh, and we haven't concluded with 9 psukim, so the requirement 10 psukim is lifted. But getting back to Tosus, you see clearly from Tosus that there's no gzeres hakos of a 10 psukim. 10 psukim is a unit of thought, of theme, of understanding, and that reflects the element of Havanas HaTorah. This was part of Takonas Ezra. As far as Moshe's takana was concerned, there was no requirement of asar psukim. Ezra added this requirement because he wanted to add the kiyum, the element, the dimension of Havana Sator, and Havana Sator requires 10 psukim, but that's only as a general rule. The exception to the rule is where you can find a full parsha with a full inyan that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it only has 9 psukim, that's fine. There's no separate requirement of asar psukim. Now, the Gemara has a chiddush here that Vayedaber is ola min aminyan, that when you calculate the 10 psukim, you can include Vayedaber Moshe, Vayedaber Shemel Moshe as well. So Sfasema says, why was this chiddush formulated only with regard to 10 psukim? After we require 10 psukim, we add Vayedaber. That's the chiddush of Rav Simi. But why couldn't Rav Simi just as easily have told me that within the unit of 3 psukim for each korei, we can calculate and include Vayedaber as well? And the Sfasemes gives the following answer, that Vayedaber's olam in a minyan, it's like Breishis Nami Maimar. Even though Breishis is not a Lashon Amira, there are Asar Mamoros, which are connected the Asar Psukim, and the Chiddush here is that Vayedaber, like the Maimar of Breishis, is incorporated into the 10. Perhaps we could enhance this by saying that since the unit of 3 is only a unit of Maisa Kriya, that the Maisa Kriya requires at least 3 psukim, has nothing to do with the conceptual Havana element that we spoke about before. Therefore, it was poshut that Vayedaber is a pasuk. And if it's a pasuk, it's part of the Maisa Kriya that's made up of 3 psukim. Why should Vayedaber be inferior? But with regard to the context of Asara psukim, which introduces the element of Havana Satora, here's where Rashi points out that Vayedaber doesn't add anything to our understanding of the parasha. Now, the Gemara goes into detail about what the significance of the number Asara is. Why 10 psukim keneged me? And the Gemara offers a bunch of answers to the significance of the number 10. We have to read 10 psukim. So one answer is keneged asara batlonim, which we discussed yesterday. They used to have 10 people in every city who would do nothing. They paid them a salary just to be available for a minyan. They would hang out in the Beis HaKnesses. The other man, the Omer, says keneged asara sadibros, that the number 10 psukim corresponds to the 10 dibros. And the third is keneged asara mamoros, that God created the world with 10 mamoros. So there's a beautiful chiddush here from the Korban Nisanel. The Korban Nisanel's last name was Vile. Weil in English. So one of my good friends from Keren Biavna was Aryeh Weil. He was Ben Acher Ben of the Korban Nisanel. I don't know if you know Rav Sinai Adler from Mevaseret. He's also from that mishpacha. The Korban Nisanel. So he wrote a super commentary on the Rosh. And he writes that each one of these different explanations to justify the number 10, as to why we have a requirement of reading 10 psukim, corresponds to a different period of time, a different zman in which we read the Torah. For example, we read the Torah Shabbos, and here it's not shy to talk about Asar Batlonim, because on Shabbos we're all Batlonim. No one's involved in Malacha. Also, the reasoning of Asar Mamoros is not Shayach, because it's Shabbos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shoveis on Shabbos from the Asar Mamoros. So therefore, here we need the reason of Keneged Aseres HaDibros. So whenever you're reading the Torah on Shabbos, and you want to know the significance of the number 10, truth is, on Shabbos we have 7 kruim, so the number 10 is not really relevant. But in the case of Shabbos Mincha, we only have 3 kruim, the minimum is 10, and that corresponds to the Aseres HaDibros. However, on Monday and Thursday, when we read the Torah and we call up three kruim, there we can talk about Keneged Asar Batlonim, because we're all going to work except for the Batlonim, and we can talk about the Asar Ma'amaros, because on Monday and Thursday God created the world. The third reasoning of Aseres HaDibros we need for Shabbos Mincha. That's the beautiful chiddush here of the Korban Asana. Now, there's another explanation here, which is in parentheses in the Gemara. The question is whether we have the Gemara or not, in the name of Rabbi Levi, that the number 10 corresponds to Asara Hilulim Sha'omar David B'Sefer Tehillim. Now, what are these Asara Hilulim of David HaMelech? So one approach is going to be based on a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, on Daf Lamed Beis. The Mishnah says that for Malchus, Zichronos and Shofros, each we need a minimum of 10 psukim. In posim me'asar b'malchus, asar b'zichronos, asar b'shofros. And the Gemara there raises the question, Hani asar, can I get me? Why do we need 10 psukim? What's the significance of the number 10? So there the Gemara quotes Rabbi Levi, the same Rabbi Levi that's quoted here, if you have that girsa. Keneged Asara Hilulim Sha'amar David B'Sefer Tehillim. So what does it mean that David HaMelech says Halleluka only 10 times throughout Sefer Tehillim? The Gemara asks, Sari David Amar Harbe Yosem Asara Hilulim. The number 10 doesn't have any significance. David HaMelech's Hallelukas appear all over the place. So the Gemara answers, there's one chapter which has 10 Hilulim in it. And that's what Reb Levi had in mind. Which chapter is that? That's the chapter called Halleluhu Beteka Shofar. And in that one small chapter, it says Halleluka 10 times. So the Turi Evan of the Shagasari, he asks, if you have the gears of our Gemara, that 10 psukim is a number that corresponds to the 10 ilulim, why did the Gemara again raise the same question? Well, David HaMelech uses Halleluka all over the place, much more than 10 times. So Torah Evan says the following, that there's a basic difference between the sugya in Rosh Hashanah and the sugya here in Megillah. The sugya in Rosh Hashanah is trying to figure out what's the relationship between Malchus, Zichronos, Shofros and the number 10? Why do we need 10 psukim? And there the Gemara is trying to find a particular kapitel in Tehillim, one chapter that relates to Rosh Hashanah, that has some connection to Rosh Hashanah. And therefore the Gemara finds 10 hilulim in the chapter that starts with Halua Teka Shofar. Here our Gemara is not talking about Teka Shofar. We're not looking for any connection between 10 psukim that we have to read on Mondays and Thursdays and Shabbos Mincha and the 10 hilulim of Tekab Shofar, of Halu Teka Shofar. Halu Teka Shofar. Our Gemara, he says, is talking about something totally different. That throughout Sefer Tehillim, if you count up the Lashonos of Shvach, you know, different words that indicate praise to God, you'll find that there are 10 different words that David uses throughout Sefer Tehillim as Shevach to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the difference between our sugya and the sugya in Rosh Hashanah. The sugya in Rosh Hashanah is looking for a connection between the number 10 and the theme of Rosh Hashanah, which is Shofar. Our sugya is looking for the number 10 as Shevach to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if you have the girsa, that's, we have it in parentheses, I don't know if you have it, Reb Levi. So that's a reference to the 10 different Lashonos of Shevach, which we're going to... Actually, the Gemara in Psochim, Madaf Kuf Yud Zayin, deep into Arvei Psochim, at the end of the Masechta, the Gemara they actually goes through one by one, all the 10 Lashonos of Shevach and Sefer Tehillim.
This doesn't...
And the final number is 10.
This refers to... says it refers to... The same Rabbi Levi says it refers to... It cites the Rebbe that it refers to the halukas at the beginning and end of the last five tehillim.
Oh, so that's the Ritva. So we were going to give the Ritva was next on our list. But just again, before we get to the Ritva, I just wanted to point out that this is a fascinating understanding of the difference between the two sugyas. And it's why is it so fascinating to me? Because Rabbi Levi says the exact same thing in both sugyas, word for word.
Oh.
And it means totally two totally different things, according to this approach. So when we say Asara Hiluv Shomer David B'Sefer Tehillim, it's not referring to one particular chapter of Tehillim, but rather to the entire book of Tehillim from beginning to end. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah is on a different vein. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah is talking about one particular chapter, which the theme of which is connected and corresponds to Rosh Hashanah. And that's Alu Teka Shofar. Now let me read to you the Ritva. The Ritva says the following. Asara Hiluvim Hey Bechamisha Prokim Hachronim Shel Tehillim. You will find 10 Hiluim in the last 5 chapters of Tehillim. And he says the following. This is, and the footnote says this is against Rashi, because Rashi says that the Gemara here is referring to the last chapter of Tehillim. But according to the Ritva, it's the last 5 chapters of Tehillim. Shevegesh Bekol Echad Mehem. In each one of the last 5 chapters of Tehillim, Yeshtei Pa'amim Loshan Hilul, Shemaskil B'Haluka U'Mesayim B'Haluka. So each one of the last 5 chapters of Tehillim begins with Haluka and ends with Haluka. And if we multiply 5 times 2, hence we get to number 10. V'hainu, Shohasam Nitkan Kenegit Asar Malchios. Oh, now he wants to connect this to the Sugya in Rosh Hashanah, that the number 10, which is the minimum requirement of Psukim in Malchios, is Mishum Shekvutza Sachamisha Prokama Elu Nizkar Tkias Shofar. That in this group, which is made up of the last 5 chapters of Tehillim, David HaMelech specifically mentions Tkias Shofar. And here, when we get to Kriyas HaTorah, so we want to look for, again, some sort of indication of thanking Hashem for giving us the Torah. And the pasuk says, Magid Dvarav LeYaakov Chukav Mishpatav LeYisrael Shezeh HaTorah. So that chapter also has a reference to Torah. Now, I promised you yesterday that we're going to enhance our understanding of Rashi on the sugya of Rava. So let's open up again to Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, and we look at Amar Rava. Now, if you'll notice, the Amud is divided up into 3 kind of shapes, if you know what I mean. So we're looking at the middle section, which is wider than the top section, but it's narrower than the bottom section. And if you count up from the wide lines at the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, you'll see Amar Rava. Amar Rava. Now keep in mind that we're calling up 3 people to read 10 psukim. That means that one of them, by definition, is going to have to read 4 psukim. So Rava goes and says, you know what? It's like, you know the phrase, kol hakadim zocha, you know, whoever comes forward, he says, I would praise the first of the 3 korim if he reads 4 psukim. And if it's the second one who reads the 4th pasuk and adds an extra pasuk, I'll give him a praise. And if it's the 3rd one, I'll give him a praise. Each one gets a special yashar koach, chazak, chazak, because he got to read the 4th pasuk. So Rashi adds a big chiddush here. This is at the end, the last thing that we read yesterday, at the end of Rashi, D'Ramaskal Rishon. And Rashi says that it doesn't necessarily mean that the first, let's say, Kohen, he gets shvach for adding the 4th pasuk, but if he didn't do so, then Levi got shvach because he added. But it could be that all 3 of them will get a special shevach for adding a 4th pasuk. You follow the difference? Again, the first part of Rashi says either the Kohen added the 4th and he gets praise, or
so,
the Levi or the Israel. It's either or.
More than 10 psukim, and anybody who adds more than a
So Rashi now, in his last pshat, he says that no, each one could add another pasuk and get this shelach of Rav. We'll see exactly how Rashi would explain the Gemara as we go along. But I just want to point out to you that here the Yalkut Biurim, he mentions a question here from the Shagas Aryeh. He says, Minayin l'Rashi dover zeh. This is a very big chiddush of Rashi. Im karu kulam dalet psukim, each one respectively read four psukim, kulam mishubachim. How could that be? Ulai, why can't I counter argue that rak echad shekar dalet kidei lahashlim lasar psukim hu mishubach? Notice the goal is to get to number 10. So whether it's the Kohen, the Levi, the Shul, whoever gets the chance, but why, how does Rashi know such a thing?
When was the order laid out of, what we have today is we kind of have a fixed, there are congregations, the Syrian congregations, I know, they stop wherever they follow the rules, but and they don't necessarily follow what's been laid out, but most of the Siddurim, including the Sephardim one, have Kohen, Levi, and Yisrael already laid out. When was that done? Because that seems to be not, that wasn't common practice apparently at this time.
You may have heard of something else. Kohen could have the fourth one.
Levi, so you get myself a drink.
Right.
The Levi could start earlier, but the, how does the Yisrael come to have fourth Sukkot?
He could start earlier. He could start, repeat a pasuk from Levi.
To me, it doesn't seem to.
Or you can go one more. It sounds like this is not a fixed parsha at this point. I know there are rules as to when.
Well, the only thing that's fixed is that we have to read Asar Psukim and call it three Korin. But exactly who's going to read which Psukim? And add to that Rashi that each one could add a fourth pasuk, and you end up with 12 psukim,
right, or more, because there might be that you can't add just one because you're too close to the end of it,
right, or to this, to that.
Yeah.
So in any event, this is the objection against Rashi. So the answer that he offers is the following. Let's just, hop back and forth here. Let's read the next piece of Gemara, and then we'll see perhaps where Rashi got this from. Rava brings a proof that each one, whether it's the first, meaning the Kohen, or the second, or the third, is worthy of praise. And he's going to quote three different halachos, which respectively refer to the first, or the second, or the third, and it's praiseworthy. The first halacha has to do with what's called Trumas HaLishka. When they collected the shkolim from the Jewish people, there was a two-stage process. Stage number one is that they collected all the Trumas HaLishka, all the contributions into one, let's call it one bag, so to speak. Then stage number two is when the Kohanim would take the shkolim out of these bags and put them into three different kupos, three different, how would you say a kupa in English, a box or a carton of some sort. Now they would write on each carton in chronological order as they filled them up in sequence an aleph, and then a beis, and then a gimel. So that's called, in the Mishnah's language, b'sholosh kupo shel sholosh soyin shebehem tormim es halishka. In other words, each one of these kupos had to be filled up one after the other with a certain volume of shkolim, which is called sholosh soyin. V'yakosav aleihem, as they took the shkolim and placed them into these three kupos, they would write aleph, beis, gimel. Why was it important to know which one had an aleph, which came first, which was number two and had a beis on it, which was number three and had a gimel? And the answer is leida ezimem nitrama rishon, because now we're up to stage three in which we take the shkolim out of the kupos and we purchase animals for purpose of a carbon sibur, And what we have to do is we have to go in order. Each Krupa is in sequence. Lahakrif Mimenu Rishon. So there's one Krupa that has an Aleph on it, and that's the Krupa where originally in the first stage the Kohanim put the Shkolim from the Lishka into that Krupa. And now we have to use that money first. Mitzvah Barishon. Now, you get the impression, again, I'm not learning Shkolim now, so don't hold me to this, that it's a din in the Rishon. I don't know about the Sheni and the Shlishi, but at least in this Mishnah, we single out the Rishon. And since that Kupa was first, it gains this special zchus of being first to be used for the mitzvah of a Korban Tzibur. Where do we see, in which halachic context do we find a significance to the middle one? That's in the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Because the menorah, of course, had seven candelabras, seven neros. There were three on one side, we'll call it the south side. There were three on the north side. If, let's say, the menorah went from south to north, again, that's a big machlokes, but let's say we hold south to north. Then there's one ner in the middle, and the three from the south turn towards the ner in the middle, the three from the north turn towards the ner in the middle, and everything turned towards the middle ner. This sanya, we learned in the Braisa, El mul pnei ha-menorah ya'iru, melamed, what does this pasuk tell me? It's the very beginning of Parshas Baloscha. It says, Shemitzadeh pneihem klapi ner ha-maravi, that all six neros were inclined, were tilted towards the middle Ner. Now, why is the middle Ner called the Maravi? Because if you situate the candelabra, the menorah, from south to north, then the middle section is towards the west. And we have a principle that the west is always the most significant, because that's where there's Shekhinah. Shekhinah is in the Mairov. So he says the following, Ner Maravi Klapi Shekhinah. The Ner Maravi would turn towards the west. This was all miraculous, supernatural, and would give a certain significance to the Ner Maravi. And in fact, it was a great miracle in the Ner Maravi. You remember this? I think we had it together when maybe that's my 8:30 class, when we spoke about Ner Chanukah, that there was a great miracle on a daily basis in the Beis HaMikdash, that even though the Ner Maravi was lit last, nevertheless it lasted longer beyond the other six. And all this is because the Shekhinah is in the Marav. And Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mikansha Emtsoi Meshubach. Now, Rabbi Yochanan might be filling in the blanks for our Gemara, or he's talking about something totally different. This is going to be a controversy amongst the commentaries. For our purposes, Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that the Korei Batorah, we have three Kruim, and the middle Korei is Meshubach. If he goes ahead and he adds the fourth Pasuk, then we give him a special praise, and he now reflects the Ner Marav. Obviously there are deeper meanings here as to why taking an extra Pasuk and being Zoch in that mitzvah has something that in some way corresponds to the Ner Marav. Now the other interpretation is based on Tosfos, which with the Sugya Menachos, that Rabbi Yochanan's comment is totally out of context. Meaning, he didn't make this comment in the context of Kriyas HaTorah. Rabbi Yochanan was talking about when you have three people and they're walking. How do we organize it? Let's say one person is the leader of the group. You know, he's the Talmud Chacham. How do we give him kavod? And the answer is that he should be flanked on both sides by the other person. Didn't he should be right in the middle.
Then we learn that somebody has to, they have to have two.
Is it here that we learned that? I don't remember. What Masechta? That he should be accompanied by two.
Abraham has the two, yeah.
As Yishmael and Eliezer, you mean? Yeah, that kind of thing? I don't remember that here in Megillah. Yeah, I think it was in Pesachim, maybe. But anyway, given as it is, so what you do is you, when three people are walking, now again, I'm not sure if they're walking side by side or one after the other, but the middle one is he's the most chashuv. If that be the case, then the Gemara is only using Rabbi Yochanan as an example of giving chashivas to the middle one, and the Gemara itself is applying Rabbi Yochanan to Kriyas HaTorah. Then we get to the third fellow. V'chein achron shekor arba mishuv mishuv mailin b'kodesh v'lo moridin. That whenever we have Kedusha, we always increase the Kedusha, and therefore the last one is Meshuvah. So getting back to Rashi now, perhaps this Gemara is the basis for Rashi that each one could add an extra pasuk. So sorry. He says the following. You might ask the following question. Let's say, Im ein hashevach el bo sofas pasuk lashlomas asor psukim. He says the following, that if the shevach is because he added that last extra pasuk, so why does the Gemara need this whole discussion here? Let's take the third guy, right? If Cohen and Levi both read respectively three psukim, then the Israel read four psukim, so he should get a shevach. Why does Gemara need to quote the halach of Ma'ala B'Kodesh V'lo Moridin?
Maybe because it's showing that each of them has the potential to be.
But he goes even further. He says that the Shlishi doesn't even have a choice now. We're going to require of him to read four psukim. So why do you give him a pat on the back? You know, the whole concept of Meshubach is because he added something. Well, he didn't add anything, the third guy. There's a lot of mathematics over here, but basically what he's saying is that there's no reason in the world to call the third guy a Meshubach. Again, very nice that you have Milo Mekosh Lo Moridin, but he's obligated, he has no choice. Now, before Rashi added this piece, we were talking about a situation where who is the one who's going to add the extra pasuk? Okay, so you could say the Rishon didn't have to do it, he passed the buck to the Sheni. The Sheni didn't have to do it, if he did it, he gets a prize for that, pat on the back. But when you get to the Shlishi, what's the Meshubach here? He has no choice. It's a mathematical kash here, you know. It's like very interesting. And he says that, no, from the fact that Gemara says that he's also Meshubach because he was Zochet to Milo Mekodesh, it means that even if there was no obligation upon him to add an extra pasuk.
And he adds one.
Anyways, I just thought it's a whole different sort of dimension to the sugi.
So is he still Meshubach if he was forced, if he was chayev?
He says that it doesn't make sense, at least in Rashi's frame of reference, that you give a guy a pat on the back Meshubach if he has no choice. You know, imagine Eric in the scenario where you're the Ola and I'm the Kori, let's say, not like the Sfaradim do it. Even the Sfaradim, it's not everyone who's such a scholar.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost an insult if you don't read it yourself.
Yeah, especially when you're in
When you're up there for Shlishi, let's say you're Yisrael, I'm not going to give you a choice. I'm going to read four psukim whether you like it or not. So why do you get a pat on the back for that? You know, where did you take the initiative? But the answer is initiative because one of the first two guys already added a pasuk.
But that occurs whether it's the first or the second also when there's a Baal Koreh, because the Baal Koreh is deciding.
Right. No, I'm just saying in the case of, let's say, the Rishon, the Kohen, so he says to the Baal Koreh, do me a favor, read a fourth pasuk. You know, he refuses to move from the spot, whatever it might be. But that's Harez and Meshubah, because he could have easily passed the buck to the second guy, and the second guy to the third guy. But when you get to the third guy, why does he deserve a prize? I just thought the mathematics here was very, very interesting. Okay. Rav Papa Ikla Lebe Knishta. Okay, here we need the archaeologists here.
could it be that it's not that he's praying, that it's not that he's Meshubach, in that he, it's not that he earned something, it's more that he merited to be the one to receive it.
Now, maybe it was Min HaShamayim.
Right. That's okay. The result.
Yeah, that's if you want to argue against Rashi. We were just trying to defend Rashi. Yeah. Because Rashi's pretty way out here. You know, according to Rashi, you talk about 12 pesukim. All right. So there was a place called Avi Gover. And I was hoping that that they would tell me, based on the archaeology of today, where this place is located. Anyway, so in that synagogue, Kara Rishon Arba, the Kohen read four psukim. Vishabche Rav Papa, Papa gave him a big yashukayach. So I guess the Gemara is just quoting this story to tell us that we actually accept Rav. On the footnote, he has a marsha. Lois Kamin Rav Papa Shadavka Rishon Tzarch Likros Abra. Right, we said before that any of the three could be Meshubach. El Shashibach Oso Al Shahay Zoriz Vizacha B'mitzvah. Zoriz meaning he took advantage of that opportunity and therefore he gave him an extra couple of brownie points here. Ain't Pochsim Lehem V'ein Mosifin V'chulei. And then it says HaPosef HaChosim B'torim V'varach L'fanel Achreham. So we're not familiar with this minhag. And that's because of the following brisa that we're about to learn. We're not familiar with the minhag that only the opening aliyah gets, he makes the opening bracha, and the last aliyah gets the closing bracha. Tana, we have a brisa. Haposeach mevarach lefanea, v'achoseh mevarach lachrea, v'ha'idna kulu mevarachi lefanea lachrea. In other words, the Bryce is telling us that at the time of the Mishnah, only the first one made the original bracha, the first bracha, and the last one made the last bracha. But today, in our time, the minhag has changed. So it's interesting, because sometimes we find that the minhag changes way after the Chasimus HaTalmud. We look into the Gemara, and we know our minhag is so different than the Gemara's minhag. But here's a case where already at the time of the Gemara, the minhag had changed. And why? Hainu taima, the takina rabbana, they made a new takana that each one of the korim should make his own bracha. Lefanel lachrea, why? Gzeira mishuma nichnasim umishuma yotzim. So this is a concept that's going to repeat itself over and over again in the next few gemaras that we're going to learn. The gemara seems to be concerned about the possibility that someone comes into the synagogue in the middle of the kriya. And one of two things happen, neither of which are very good. One thing is that he missed the original bracha, and now maybe he has to forfeit the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. Bli Neder, we'll talk about that. The other possibility is that what the Gemara means is we're not so worried about him in terms of this particular occasion in which he missed the bracha, but we're worried about his coming to the wrong conclusions. He might be mistaken. If he comes in the middle, and the original, let's say, Kohen, the first Ola, had already made the bracha, but he came in the middle, he didn't hear that bracha, he thinks that there's no requirement of a bracha lefanel. He's never been exposed to it. Let's say he's a Baal Tshuva, this is the first time he came to Shul. I'm just giving a dramatic example, right? Or he's a young boy, a bar mitzvah boy, it's the first time he came to the synagogue. And he doesn't hear a bracha. That's as far as what's called nichnasim. Nichnasim means he came in late. And then we have the yotzim. The yotzim are those who left early. And if he left early, he never heard the bracha lachrea. So as far as he's concerned, he thinks it's a bracha lefaneha. He stood there to hear all the aliyahs and all of this, but he just checked out right before the last bracha. So if he heard the Kohen making a bracha lachrea, and he heard the Levi making a bracha lachrea, so he got the message. And if he didn't see if he didn't hear the Yisrael making a bracha lachrea, he understands because he left too early. Had he stayed a little bit longer, then there's no reason why the Yisrael wouldn't have made a bracha lachrea. So you see something from this sugya, by the way, and that is that the bracha is very critical. Very often we differentiate between the bracha and the mitzvah. This is the principle called Habrochas Eina Ma'akvos. You could be out to the mitzvah and fine. But you see from this Gemara that the bracha is essential to the mitzvah. Now, I'm not sure if that's a separate din in Kriyas HaTorah, or perhaps it reflects on any kind of a mitzvah where the bracha describes the mitzvah. In other words, the standard formula for a bracha doesn't describe the mitzvah, it just names the mitzvah. But there are brachos, they're few and far between, which go beyond just naming the mitzvah. It's not just a shekichon mitzvah, it's also boom. But the bracha explains the mitzvah, describes the mitzvah. I'll give you an example. Birchas Kriyat Shema. There's a lot in Birchas Kriyat Shema, a great deal of detail. And the Rambam writes that if a person is misupak, if he doesn't know whether he recited Kriyat Shema or not, he has to repeat Shema with its brachot. In other words, the normal principle of Sofik Brachas Lahakel does not apply to Birchas Kriyat Shema, because the Birchas Kriyat Shema is essential to the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. Here also, we're going to suggest that perhaps the Gemara means that Birchas HaTorah, Asher Bachar Bonim Kol Amim, and Asalam is Torah, so this is a description of what Torah is all about. So the external reading of the Torah could be understood in so many different ways. You know, we're taking out a Chumash, and we're reading Psukim, we're taking out a Sefer Torah, but we want to elevate it to a level of an experience in which we're thanking Hashem, we're receiving the Torah, and for that we need the bracha. And this is really musar for myself, maybe for other people, that you really have to be makpid to listen to the brachas and to come on time to hear the brachas, because there's a story about the Brisker Rav. I once heard that he came for Kriyas HaTorah, and he came one second late, and he didn't hear the original bracha. So he got up and he told those who were accompanying him, we have to find another shul to hear Kriyas HaTorah, because he didn't hear the bracha. We once had a discussion here about a cheresh as to whether or not he could be mafresh truma. Do you remember that, by any chance? It was a few blot ago. Because the cheresh can't hear his own bracha, so you're missing a certain key element here in the mitzvah of bracha. But again, you're talking about being mafresh truma. I mean, lechora ain't a brachas ma'akvos. I don't know exactly. That seems to indicate that in general, you know, we want to set up a mitzvah with a bracha, and that's critical. I don't know. Jerry, you have to go. Okay. So I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah.
Right,
okay. Have a great day.
All right,
thank you so much. Eric, you can stay another few minutes?
Oh yeah.
Okay,
I'm
great.
High school, I'm,
so let's move on.
Yeah, we're getting to the Rosh. This is a sugya that I remember from when I learned the Megillah before. And
wow. Yeah,
I always had a problem with it. I still have a problem. I still don't, you know, the reasoning for the Rosh Chodesh
division
order, it still doesn't make sense according to the rules they set up.
Well, let's see. Okay, well, let's go through the sugya with him.
Let me get a sitter.
Yeah, okay. We'll do this with an open mind. Basically, the Kriya of Rosh Chodesh is a very complicated Kriya because it's made up of three different parts.
Uh-huh. Right.
The first part is what's called Tamid, the Korban Tamid. And that's made up of 8 psukim.
Mm-hmm.
And from there we go on to the Korban Musaf of Shabbos, which has 2 psukim. And finally, the culmination, the pinnacle, is the Parsha of Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, which is made up of 5 psukim. So if you take the first part, that's the Tamid, you could easily divide it up for the Kohen and the Levi of 4 psukim each. That would be the simplest way of doing it. But if you do it that way, it's going to get complicated, because when you get to the Musaf of Shabbos, that's made up of 2 psukim. And we never have a Kriya of less than 3 psukim. So right. we have 2 choices here. Either somehow we would incorporate the 2 psukim of Shabbos into the unit of 8 psukim of the Talmud. But then we're stuck, because we need another 2 Korin, and we're left with the Musaf Rosh Chodesh, which has 5 psukim. So that's going to bring us to a famous machlokas between Rav and Shmuel about how you can divide a 5 psukim amongst 2 Korin. But let's go through the Gemara. So Barashi Chadashim V'chol Shalmoed Korim Arba Boi Minei Ula Mirav Mi Barav Mirava. And it's very interesting that Rama didn't really know the answer, but he had a different case, and he thought it would be a paradigm for our case, a good analogy. So what was the question that Ula asked Rava? Parshas Rosh Chodesh Ketzad Korino. So how do we divvy up the psukim on the Kriya of Rosh Chodesh? If we start with Parshas Tamid, Saves Bnei Yisrael Yemata Lemes Korbani Lachmi Tahavyon Tamni Psukim. We have eight psukim. Hechi Navid. How do we divide it up? Nikri Trei Tlosa Tlosa Psukim. If you're going to give the barest minimum of three psukim for each of the two, then you've covered six psukim. Now you have two psukim left. So what are you going to do with those two psukim? Pashul Eitrei. You're left with two psukim in the parasha of the Talmud. The Ein Mishayrim, the parasha Pachos Mishlosha psukim. We're going to learn later on that there's an ironclad rule that you could never end a parasha without leaving three psukim to be read. In other words, you can't stop within that range of three psukim, let's say two psukim. You can't do that. So somehow, what we're going to have to do now is we're going to have to make sure that we don't stop within two psukim of the end of Parshas Tamid. So then we have a simple solution. Nikri Arba Arba. So let each
not
one...
supposed to, that would also apply, you're not supposed to start with just two psukim.
We'll get to that too in a minute. So again, at this point in the Gemara's development, we have a simple solution to Parshas Tamid. Nikri Arba Arba. Right? Because then what do? You cover with the Kohen and the Levi the entire Parshas Tamid, which is one third, so to speak. I don't mean in terms of psukim, but one unit of the three units of the Kriya of Rosh Chodesh, and you finish the entire parasha. So that's wonderful. So what are we left with now? Now we have two psukim of Shabbos, of the Musaf of Shabbos, and now we have five psukim of the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. It's Pashu Beis Shiva. So we have 5 plus 2, or I should say 2 plus 5 in that order. The Yom HaShabbos HaVitrei, Rosh Chodesh Shechem HaVion Chamisha. So now we have two Korim, we have the Shlishi and the Revi, and we have 5 psukim to cover. Hechi Navid. How are we going to divide up the 5 psukim for 2 Korim? And each one needs a minimum of 3 psukim. Is Nikri Trei miha v'chad mihach. What are you going to do? Are you going to ask that the shlishi read 2 psukim from Ubiyom HaShabbos and then let him add the 3rd pasuk from the first of the 5 psukim of Rosh Chodesh? That seems like a logical possibility. So Gemara says no, that's impossible as well. And here on Chof Beis Amenal, ain't maschilin b'parsha Pachos Mishlosha Psukim. Not only is there a requirement to Shlosha Psukim at the end of the parasha, you'd have to leave at least a minimum of 3 Psukim, but not only that, you can't begin a parasha with less than 3 Psukim. So what are you going to do? You're going to add the first Pasuk of Musaf Rosh Chodesh to the 2 Psukim of Musaf of Shabbos, then you've only read 1 Pasuk of the parasha of Rosh Chodesh. That you can't do. So now what are you going to do? Likre trei miha utlosa mihach. What you're going to do is read 2 psukim of Yom HaShabbos, then read 3 psukim of Barash Echadashim, which is fine, right? Because now you've covered 5 psukim for the third Ola, and you've already penetrated 3 psukim into Rosh Chodesh. The only thing is now you're stuck on the other end because you have a 4th kori, partially trei, and the 4th kori needs a minimum of 3 psukim. Omolo Zulo Shamati. So Rava says, I didn't hear this question, but Kayotze Bo Shamati. I have a similar syntax, and we could make an analogy between the two. This Nan. Now here we have a Mishnah in Masechta Tainis with regard to Ma'amados. Let me just read the Pasuk. He quotes the Pasuk here in the footnote. It says in Bamidbar Chav Ches, Tzav Es Bnei Yisrael, Es Korbani Lachvi Lishai. And the Gemara darshins the following: how could it be that we bring the korban on a daily basis on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and we need that the bala korban be there at the time of that korban? So we really have a paradox in the halacha itself, because on the one hand it's Bnei Yisrael, the entire nation of Israel is obligated in this korban. But on the other hand, how could we have a representation? You know, we can't have all the people there. So the Gemara answers that we made a takana of a representation. Hiskinu Nevi'im Rishonim, right? There's an ancient takana. Sheyu Yisrael Mechulakim liasara v'arboma modos. So they divided up the people of Israel into 24 groups, which are called ma'amodos. Ma'amodos b'loshen amido, because they have to stand there when the carbon is brought. The alkol mishmar kohanim hayu ma'amad Yisrael. In other words, there are 24 mishmaros of kohanim, and each one of the mishmaros was accompanied by a Yisrael. Ukshehoya magia zmana mishmar kohanim v'alaviyim. V'chein ma'at mi'Yisraelim sha'ol lamad al karban hayu olam Yisholayim. Yisrael shebosom mishmar hayu miskansim v'batik nesios korim v'maisa breishis. So these Jews that had their chance, you know, it was their week, was twice a year of being there at the Ma'amados, they had a special kriya in the Beis HaKnesses. And what did they read? They read Maisa Bereishis. All this is in Masechta Tanya's on Daf Chaf Vav. So again, for the Ma'amados, there was a special kriya of Maisa Bereishis. Oh. Now what goes on? The Yom HaRishon, the first day of the week, they would read Bereishis and Vayhi Rakia. Okay, we're going to see exactly how many psukim there are in Bereishis and Yehi Rakia in just a second. With Tani Allah, the Braisa says the following, that we're going to have to divide up this reading into three korim, like any minimum kriya. Bereishis b'shnayim and Yehi Rakia b'echad. Notice they would divvy up the reading of Bereishis up till Yehi Rakia amongst two korim, and Yehi Rakia would be designated for the third aliyah. So the Gemara says the following. Havinan ba, we ask the following objection. We raise the following. Bishleima Yehi Rakia v'echa. That makes sense that you could have one person read Yehi Rakia. The tlosa psuki havi. There are three psukim that made up that section called Yehi Rakia. So one person could read all three. Ela, but Bereishis v'shnayim. How can you divvy up Bereishis amongst two olim? Chamisha psukim havi. V'tanya, hakori v'toro lo yifchos mishlosha psukim. So how do you divide up Bereishis into two korim when it's five psukim? And you need three minimum. And now we get to the gigantic machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Itmar Allah, Rav Omar Dolik. Notice Rav says that we repeat psukim. So the first ol is going to read three. The second ol is also going to read three. He's going to repeat the last pasuk of the three psukim that the first ol...
How do they address the issue of having less than two before and less than two after?
I lost you on that one.
In other words, if somebody reads three out of the five, he has less than two remaining. Less than two psukim remaining, and we learned that that's a problem.
If the next one reads three, then it starts with the third verse. That's going to come up in a minute. The only question is, well, we'll get to it today. If not, Eric, you know, hold me responsible tomorrow for this. So that's called Dolik. I was never exactly sure, maybe you could help me with this, or maybe there's a footnote, he doesn't have anything. Mm-hmm. Why the word Dolik? I would have said Kofel or Choser. I don't know, Dolik means to skip. I don't know exactly what the
it
word
is.
He doesn't have anything. Okay, yeah. Fine. So we'll try to think of an answer to that question as well. But in any event, what it means is he repeats a pasuk that was already read. Shmuel Amar Posek. Shmuel says something which sounds very strange to our ears. And basically, you take a pasuk and you split it in half. So the first ol is going to read 2.5 psukim, and the second is going to read 2.5 psukim, and that's enough to cover you for this requirement of 3 psukim. Rava says that from this machlok, Shin Rav and Shmuel, regarding Ma'amados, we can derive conclusions about the Kriya of Rosh Chodesh. So according to Rav, what we're going to do with the third, right, let's go over the problem that we had. We divvied up Tamid into two sections, two Korim of 4 psukim each.
Right.
Now we added for the third one, what do we have? We have 7 psukim left. We have 2 psukim for Shabbos, 5 psukim for Rosh Chodesh. And we have to read the first 3 psukim of Rosh Chodesh because we can't start a parasha with less than 3 psukim. So the third ola is going to have to read 5 psukim. Then what are you left with? We left with 2 psukim. So now you have 2 opportunities. Either you avail yourself of Rav, and it means that the fourth ola will begin by repeating the last pasuk that was read by the third karui, the third ola, and that'll make up the 3 psukim. So in other words, the third ola read the first three psukim of Rosh Chodesh, of Musaf Rosh Chodesh, and the fourth Ol is going to pick up and repeat the last of those, the last of those three psukim, which is the fifth pasuk that he read, and add it to the next two. But according to Shmuel, what we're going to do is we're going to take that last pasuk and we divide it into two.
Right, the middle one.
Right. And what's going to happen is that the last pasuk of the Shlishi, half of which is going to be read by the Shlishi, right? And by reading half the pasuk, he accomplishes the goal of penetrating three psukim into the parsha of Rosh Chodesh. And then when the Revi will read the second half of that pasuk, meaning the third pasuk in Parshas Musaf Rosh Chodesh, that's considered the first pasuk of the three psukim that he needs, and he's going to add the two psukim, making up the three psukim. Yeah.
The question that arises, once you start saying you can repeat a verse, let's say go back to Rav. Once you start going to saying you can repeat a verse, then why not repeat more than one verse?
This is not a lechatchila. Gemara is going to call it lo efshar.
Right.
Again, Rav and Shmuel are going to have a difference of opinion as to what lo efshar means in this context. But Rav is going to, you know, do damage control. You know, and what we're trying to do is repeat one pasuk and not more than one pasuk if we can help it.
Right.
We have to know about the kriya on Cholamoy Pesach. I mean, that's going to be another issue, because there we repeat. Repeat psukim over and over and over again, or something. So tomorrow, believe that we're going to have an analysis here of Rav and Shmuel, and we're going to try to figure out exactly. Again, what was your question? Let me just make sure I don't forget it. That if the third ola,
why once you're repeating, why not instead just repeat more than one verse?
No. You had a question before. What was your question before that? Rakia, about the Rakia, no?
Right. Aren't they? Yeah. Don't they still have the issue of
because what? Two, yeah. Four, so let's go over this. So what do we say about the Rakia? Is the third,
three,
the third
one reads three, and then the next reads one through three, and then the next reads three,
two,
five.
Right, 3 to 5.
And so you always have both of them have either two. Oh, they're starting only two psukim in, or they're leaving two psukim after, which.
Right, so I'm pretty sure that the answer to that question is that there's no parsha. In other words, I don't think we're dividing Bereshis and Rakia into two parshios.
But you're not supposed to start within a parsha. You're not supposed to leave less than two at the end of the parsha, and you're not supposed to start less than
I got to get the math straight again. So again, the Bereshis itself, we said, was five psukim.
Five, right?
Five psukim. So
and
what
they divide
do
that into
now?
Two. They divide into two readers. They do.
Oh, two, and that's going to be Machlokas Rav and Shmuel.
Right.
How do you divide?
Right. How you divide that into three? And according to Doleg, which is
and the Shlishi is going to read Rakia. How many psukim in Rakia? Only two.
Only two. But it's a whole. No. That one was that one only two. Well, that was three. No, that's three.
That was three. That was three psukim.
Right. That was three psukim.
So
that was not a problem.
But Bereshis was the problem, because that's five psukim.
Exactly.
We've got to get two korim. And again, I'm a little slow when it comes to math. But so what's your problem then?
The problem is, if you follow Rav, then the first reader reads three psukim, and he leaves less than three remaining.
Ah, so that's what I think. I don't think Bereshis and Rakia are not two different parshios.
It seems to be saying that they're two different parshios. That's their concern.
I thought the concern was dividing up three in a way. Because the total number of psukim, how many psukim do we have all total?
We have eight. That's the other problem. Yeah, you have eight, so you can't do three. You'd have to do three, three, two. But if well, no, because if they're not different parshios, then.
Yeah, just one second. Let me just go over.
Because they're talking about
time. I'm sorry, I keep losing the place here. That's my problem. So what do we have in Mamados? We have Bereshis. Now let's go over this one more time. So Bereshis is what? Is how many psukim? Chamisha psukim, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the five psukim in Bereishis. Just one second. Five psukim in Bereishis.
How many psukim are there in Rakia? They're separate partioed.
Rakia has two psukim?
No, three.
Three. Okay, so Chamisha psukim in Bereishis.
Right.
And Yehi Rakia. So one second. So we'll break. If we. The third, and there are three psukim in Rakia.
Right.
So we want to read Bereishis and divide it up into two. Correct. Im nechlek parshas zulishnei korim. If we're going to take parshas Bereishis and divide into two korim. Yeah. Right. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just the pressure sort of.
Yeah.
So I'll blend it and I'll get back to you tomorrow.
This one's